This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
2024 is on track to become one of the deadliest years on Irish roads in over a decade.
It's understood the crash involved a car and an articulated lorry. The woman driving the car and two girls who were passengers in the car were killed.
Flowers have been left at the scene of the latest fatal road crash in which two young men were killed last night.
A teenager has died after being hit by a car on the N17 in County Mayo.
So far this year, 63 people have died in road accidents across the country. That compares to 49 deaths by the same time last year.
I'm really concerned about the trend we're seeing in relation to deaths on our roads. We have to take action.
This week, Taoiseach Simon Harris met with the RSA, the Road Safety Authority, to discuss the increase in fatalities, calling it a top priority for the government.
We've agreed a series of actions we're going to take together, including around policing enforcement, including around issues like public awareness campaigns and education.
They're also considering a shake-up of the RSA, which is under fire from numerous road safety groups, who say the organisation is no longer fit for purpose. Chairperson of the RSA, Liz O'Donnell, however, rejects those claims.
Well, I would take issue with it. The Road Safety Authority is the lead agency. Understandably, we'll be the target for criticism. But really, this is an all-of-government road safety strategy. We can only do so much. We're there. We're doing our best. They have a point when they say not fit for purpose. Our budget isn't fit for purpose, certainly.
I'm Sarah Pollock, and this is In the News from the Irish Times. Today, road debts on the rise. What will it take to make Irish roads safer? David Labani is the head of the Irish Times audience department, and Mark Hilliard is a reporter with the Irish Times. Mark, can you start by reminding us, how many deaths have there been on Irish roads so far this year, and how do these numbers compare to previous years?
Yeah, so far this year we've had 63 deaths on our roads. And so I think if you just do a very basic back of the envelope calculation, we're heading very badly in the wrong direction. So last year we had 184 fatalities, which was a 20% increase on the previous year and the highest in about 10 years. I think what's interesting contextually about fatality rates in Ireland is actually we have, relatively speaking, quite a low fatality rate, and it's come down quite substantially since the turn of the century. So in 2002, for instance, for the first time ever, with the exception of one anomaly year in the mid-80s, we came down below the 400 figure, and that was quite a sea change. And we never went back up again. Came close a few years later, but we never breached the 400 mark again. Then in 2008, we came below the 300 threshold and never went back up again. And in 2011, we came below 200 and never went back up again. Now, I think what the RSA and Garda Síochána and politically the main concerns now are going to be that, you know, going back to that sort of crude back of the envelope calculation, if deaths this year continue in the manner they're going, we stand a very real chance of going back above the 200 mark. Now, obviously, this is all statistics and we're all very conscious that these are real people. But in order to understand the trends and patterns, you look at those sort of key metrics. And it's not just that they're going up and it's a bad year. It's that we're really dangerously going in the wrong direction.
David, do you want to jump in?
I was just going to add, I think along with the sort of the absolute increase, what's also interesting is which demographics are most affected. So if you look at last year, there's an increase of 30 deaths. You look at the 16 to 25 year old age cohort, and there was an increase of 30 deaths. So within the overall increase in road fatalities, and as Mark said, behind all these statistics are real people, you know, it's one of those trends that's emerged more sharply in recent years. Younger drivers have always sort of been disproportionately represented in the statistics. But last year in particular, there was a sharp increase in that under 25-year-old cohort.
So why is this happening? Have our attitudes towards road safety transformed in recent years because, for example, more people are using mobile phones while driving? Or is this about the way we even regard drink driving now? Is that changing?
For mobile phone use, I think everybody everybody sees that that's no longer an emerging issue, but it's getting worse and worse. And that's probably because, you know, 10 years ago, we all had mobile phones, but we probably ran less of our lives on the reliance of the mobile phone. So people are, you know, using them more and more just on an hourly basis. And then if you take that into a car, for a lot of people, that behavior is going to go into the car as well. But the drink driving attitudes are certainly a point of concern. It's something the RSA has been raising quite a lot. They do regular behavior and attitude surveys to try and get a grip on what people think about road safety and how they behave on the roads. And certainly there has been a worrying decline in the attitude towards acceptability around drink driving. And we're not talking about, you know, people getting, you know, inebriated and getting behind the wheel of the car. I don't think you'd find anybody who would consider that to be acceptable. So a lot of the behavior studies will be around how do people feel about driving after one drink or maybe two drinks, because I think that's really the best way to get into the mindset of people. And what they found in that most recent survey was where the sort of level of unacceptability in people's minds was in the 70 percentile, the high 70s. So still, you know, overwhelmingly against this idea that you would drink with alcohol. It had reduced from the 90 percentile range in previous surveys. So that indicates a worrying, slow sort of creep in this mentality towards what's acceptable. And then some of the other key metrics were then as well that they found a lot of people thought it was acceptable to drive locally after having one drink. And then about 10% of people had admitted that in the previous 12 months, they had gotten behind the wheel of the car, having consumed some amount of alcohol. And even at the time that they launched those findings, the RSA felt confident that that was an understated result.
What Mark's pointing out there is that sort of sense from drivers that they feel it's okay to drive locally. They're probably only doing that because they have the confidence in being able to do that with a very low likelihood of being caught. People now feel that it's a potential option for them, whereas I think 10 years ago, the threat of potential enforcement and detection was much more sort of firmly to the front of people's minds. And for whatever combination of factors, I think that fear of detection has reduced in recent years.
Last week, Minister of State at the Department of Transport, Jack Chambers, announced that recommendations on reforming the Road Safety Authority would be brought forward this summer. The Department of Transport also announced in recent weeks that it was commissioning an external review of the RSA. Now, the RSA has been around for 18 years and for a long time was viewed as having a very positive impact in helping to save lives on Irish roads. David, can you start by bringing us back to the early 2000s when this organisation was set up and Gay Byrne was appointed chairperson? Let's talk about his role then. Why was he so impactful in getting the messaging of road safety across to people?
I remember actually going to the press conference when Gay Byrne was announced as the chair of the RSA, 2006. People were very surprised. He was not somebody who was on the sort of the boards and chairs circuit. It's not really somebody who was seen in any way as political. He was somebody who had previously commented on road safety. He famously loved riding his motorbike. I spent a lot of time doing that, covered a lot of ground around the country. The RSA was set up to replace what was then the National Safety Council. And the National Safety Council, you could argue it faced many of the similar kind of challenges that are maybe swirling around the RSA today. So they'd set up the RSA, they'd identified Noel Brett, who was then working in the health service in the UK and was seen as an excellent administrator in terms of running a large organisation as a chief executive. And Gay Byrne came on board as chair. And in his very first press conference, he said he would not accept any ministerial messing about, red tape, excuses. He would not accept any lack of political will. If he saw that, he'd resign. And then he'd have a press conference and he'd call everybody to the press conference. He'd name names and he'd say why he was gone and why certain things weren't done. And it was an interesting move. Martin Cullen was the minister. Generally, ministers don't like to make board appointments who might explode in front of them and sort of call them out and expose them to severe amounts of criticism. What it did give the RSA was a real sense of independence. So it wasn't seen as sort of an arm of the sort of the department. It was seen as separate. That independence, I think, was very sort of actively defended by Byrne and Brett in their roles. And they really did quite a good job of establishing the RSA as sort of a quasi watchdog type body, as in it was, you know, not just there behind the scenes making policy and making suggestions, but it was quite front and center and would have no problem sort of putting forward its view on what should be happening rather than filtering everything through the arm of the department. As it happens, Byrne stayed in the role for about 7 years. And what was notable with Byrne and Brett is that they worked quite well in the sort of the soft political power area. So Gay Byrne was very comfortable, obviously, in broadcasting, great public support. He had the ability to say to Irish motorists, cop on. You know, there are certain things that are happening which are the responsibility of the guards. There are certain things that are happening in responsibility of the department. Some of it is the responsibility of the driver. He could say cop on and people would listen. And he also worked quite hard in terms of trying to understand younger drivers and sort of where their heads were at and spent quite a lot of time engaging with them. So I think at its inception and also the sort of the fair wind that will exist behind every new organisation, I think they were quite effective. I think there was a political appetite to take on board some of the suggestions they were making. When the RSA was set up, road deaths were pretty much double what they are now. So they're in the 350, 360 range, as Mark was saying. They've come down significantly since. And I think the RSA was seen as playing sort of a key role in a three-legged stool with the departments on the legislative side and the guards on the enforcement side and all three agencies needing to work together.
So what happened when Gay Byrne left the role 10 years ago? How has the RSA been performing since then?
I think what's happened since is interesting. Whether it's by accident or design is quite hard to understand. I think most observers of road safety would take the view that the RSA has gradually sort of stepped away from the front of house role and it's become more of a behind the scenes body. It has struggled to get some effective road safety measures over the line. Some measures, for example, last year they introduced an increase in the fines for penalty points. Any of the data we have seen suggests this has had no impact. Some of the things they did try and do didn't work. So Shane Ross had a bill that was approved by Cabinet just before the last government fell, which would have seen graduated penalties for drivers for speeding, depending on how far over the speeding limit they were. Quite radical of its time, potentially could have dealt with some of the most high-risk behaviour where drivers are detected. And we see it at every bank holiday, drivers being detected 50, 60, 80 kilometres over the speed limit. That bill fell when the new government came in, and the new government consciously decided not to pursue that bill. Even though the bill had passed cabinet and was pretty much ready to go, it was dropped. And the RSA also had a plan to try and name and shame dangerous drivers. And again, they ran into difficulty with this. And there is a sense that the RSA's ability to suggest and progress new initiatives has slowed. And where the RSA goes from here is quite hard to know. I'm not entirely sure if the review that Chambers mentioned is a sort of a re-examination of the RSA's ethos and focus and sort of its raison d'etre and what it's supposed to be achieving, or is it something slightly more procedural? I've been informed that the review has been carried out by Indicon, who review various agencies like the RSA are sort of on a rotational basis every 5 or 6 years. And it's more of a sort of an oversight review rather than more of a what is the RSA for and what should it be trying to achieve. But I think in any examination of the RSA and road safety more generally, it's impossible to disassociate its role, its function and its effectiveness from its interdependency with the legislative departments in transport and justice and enforcement. And any progress that has been made previously in relation to road safety has always seen those three arms working effectively together, usually under the guise of very strong political focus.
David, you actually reported in January that the Department of Transport had refused a request from the RSA for €6 million in additional funding to hire new staff as part of its expansion of its road safety campaigns. Why was this refused? And do you think more staff could have brought about the change that they wanted?
So that story was reporting correspondence between the RSA and senior officials in the Department of Transport. The RSA had responded to a request from the department for new ideas to try and deal with the road deaths, which, as Mark explained last year, were up to over 180. And this correspondence was happening at the end of last summer. And they were really looking for short-term measures that they thought were going to have an impact. So the RSA sent back a response. And the response sought additional money for expanded education campaigns and also asked for funding to allow it to hire, I think it was about 9 staff, almost all of whom were going to be in the marketing, the research. There was some work on a speed limit review and a range of other functions that the RSA saw as having a role in dealing with the increase in road deaths. The department responded and said, you can spend your existing reserves. So they didn't give them any new money. They said, you can spend existing reserves, but we can't grant you the new staff. That's quite interesting. And this morning, if you're listening to the radio and you listen to the Minister for Transport, he's talking about the need for the RSA to improve. And also, and I quote, to make sure that it has the resources and it has the necessary staff and it has the remit to do its job. So it's an interesting example of, you know, the RSA asking for the tools that it thinks it needs to do the job, not being given them. I think there was some suggestion that this decision on staffing may be returned to at some later point this year. But it's just an insight into the decision-making dynamic between the RSA and the department. And again, all of the examples where we've seen progress has seen the legislative, the RSA, and the enforcement arms working together. And in this case, there does appear to be a little bit of a disconnect.
Coming up, will a new Gartha directive help reduce road debts? I'll continue my conversation with Mark Hilliard and David Labani after this short break.
This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, creating a more friction-free office. Made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
Last Monday, the RSA chairperson, Liz O'Donnell, said there needed to be a significant ramping up of a visible enforcement to combat bad driver behaviour. And a few days later, the Gartha Commissioner announced a new directive that all uniformed Gardaí must conduct 30 minutes of high visibility roads policing during their shifts. How effective do you think this directive will be? And also, where does Gartha Síochána's role fit into all of this?
I think there's an element, or at least a suspicion, of some papering over the cracks with this one. And we're already hearing mutterings from within Garda ranks that it's problematic in terms of how you would execute that policy. There's a wait and see element here, but obviously what everybody's very conscious of is that the guards are having trouble recruiting. They're certainly having trouble and have been for a number of years getting back up to speed on recruitment levels. And whether it's public order in Dublin or whether it's the closure or the partial closure of rural Garda stations, there's enormous pressure from a lot of different avenues on like where you put the Garda resources. And the RSA obviously increasingly vocally saying that the Garda numbers need to be ramped up. I can recall a time when there was a little bit more reticence about coming out and saying that openly. And certainly the guards are being sort of challenged on this a little bit more. When are you going to increase the number of roads policing? Jack Chambers has come out quite solidly and said it needs to be increased. So there's an awful lot of stuff going on in the background. And I would question whether this latest policy is just an effort to be seen to be attempting to address it in that wider vacuum of recruitment.
Mark, why do you think it feels fundamentally harder at the moment to get the messaging around road safety through to people?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one. Obviously, the various efforts that we take, and in this case that the RSA takes to get the message across, they've always run quite a slick sort of marketing campaign. I mean, everybody knows that horrendous Crash Lives ad that appears frequently on TV with that four-year-old Kieran Tracy who was killed in 2014. And more recently, they focused on cycling and they released the video with Imogen Cotter, the professional cyclist who was horrifically injured in a crash. Now, that, as it happens, that happened in Spain, but because she's Irish, they were using her to speak about, you know, the impact that those crashes can have. You know, we're in a digital age now, and I think the RSA are stretched. They've been moving an awful lot of their focus into the likes of TikTok and various social media channels, specifically in order to try and target the younger drivers who are disproportionately affected by road crashes. This pulls us back again. Of course, all of these arguments are connected. It pulls us back to funding. And one of the key things the RSA is intent on doing is to bring more of an onus on awareness raising amongst those younger people in schools. And they'd ultimately like to see that brought onto the curriculum. But Liz O'Donnell has recently said that, again, that goes back to funding. And I think we're starting to see that funding, partially, I think, because of some of the reporting, it's coming a little bit more into the public now. You'd get a sense that maybe the RSA are making a very public call to the new Taoiseach who's come in. Leo Varadkar was was quite a supporter of road safety, and it didn't seem to make much of a difference. So I think a lot of this stuff is becoming more public now. So whether it's how thinly spread you try to get the message out, or whether it's a funding issue, these are all open questions. But also then ultimately it comes down to how much of an effect can marketing getting the message out there really have, when we've actually done that, you know, arguably quite well over the years.
David, the road safety strategy spans the years 2023 to 2030, and its ambition is to guide Ireland towards Vision Zero, a safe systems approach which is intended to deliver the long-term goal of eradicating road traffic deaths and serious injuries by 2050. But given the current numbers dying on Irish roads, do you believe this can be achieved?
At face value, it looks very challenging. I think the sort of that effective zero target, and other countries share it, it's that's the objective. There's always going to be things that are potentially beyond your control in terms of bad weather and stuff like that. We're not on the right trajectory for achieving something like that at the moment. And to do so, there's probably a couple of things we need to look at. I find that increase in deaths for the under 25s notable and worrying, and you'd wonder from a policy point of view, is there anything they should be thinking about? So, for example, if you take the under 25s, is probably when a lot of people get their first license. When you're a learner driver, you have to be accompanied by an experienced driver. As soon as you pass your test, you don't have to be. And, you know, many drivers probably need about 24 months, thereabouts, depending on the experts and the view you believe, to sort of build up the proper level of experience to be able to account for a range of different driving behaviours. There's no motorway driving in the curriculum and the driving test in Ireland. Given the proportion of motorway driving, maybe that's something that we need to think about. As Mark says, the RSA is trying to reach younger drivers. And I think for those kind of marketing campaigns, and some of them are very strong, and the RSA has won some awards for some of its campaigns, I think you have to create the context for the campaign to be received. So I think any one action on its own is probably unlikely to succeed. So if we're just relying on education and marketing campaigns to try and change behaviours of all drivers or a particular cohort, chances are it may not work. I think what we've seen in the past that has worked, and what has worked in other countries, is a range of different aspects around road safety need to act in harmony. And then I think you might change things. So that includes driver training. That includes sort of the structure of the licensing process, especially for inexperienced drivers. It includes enforcement. It includes legislative changes. And then the sort of the marketing and education and engagement type programs that the RSA can run. But my sense is that in recent years, road safety has relied maybe a little bit too much on the marketing and the education, and maybe the political and the enforcement sides have maybe not played a significant role as they did in the past. And I think if we're to change the trends that we're seeing at the moment, we may need to get back to a place where all of those various component parts are playing more of an equal role and are working together in concert to really get people to pay attention to this.
Final word to you, Mark.
It's interesting. It's timely that we're talking about it here, because the EU did bring out data earlier this month that showed that 1% decrease in fatality rates that we were just discussing. But they said in their report that few member states, to quote them directly, were on track to meet the target of halving the number of road deaths by 2030. And in Ireland, just to give a very stark indicator of where we are, our target would be no more than 72 fatalities a year by 2030. So that's obviously in 6 years' time. And we're already creeping up towards that 200 mark. So that Vision Zero is problematic. It's arguably a hostage to fortune. And I think all European countries have a long way to go to get there.
David Labani, Mark Hillier, thank you both so much for your time today. That's all for today. For more reporting on transport and road safety, subscribe at irishtimes.com/subscribe. I'm Saoirse Pollock. This episode was produced by Declan Conlon and Suzanne Brennan. In the News, we'll be back tomorrow.